I put the intention out there that by the time I had 10 years sober, I wanted to have a book out. And that's exactly what happened, which was cool.
Yeah. But when you say these things, I really do think that there's power when you say it and then you put it out there into the world.
Yep. That's what we were telling those little kids at the career school.
You say it and it will become real.
Courtney Friel is a TV news reporter and anchor at KTLA News in Los Angeles. She's also a podcaster, author, and now she's got a movie in the works, guys. In this episode, she keeps it friel about what it costs to get a book published. She shares how she balances her professional career with her very personal podcast and dives into strategies to handle the fear that comes with putting yourself out there without abusing drugs or alcohol.
Welcome to Podcast Coaching with Christine. Here we talk about how to grow your podcast using industry insights and broadcasting strategies.
Welcome to the show. I'm excited for you guys to get to know this week's guest just a little bit better. She is a friend and a former colleague, and I'm really excited to share her story with you because not only is she a journalist, now she's got a feature film in the works, which is amazing and exciting. So listen in, especially if you at some point want to turn your podcast or book into a movie. Before we dive in, I do want to take a moment to shout out our reviewer of the week. It's Sherry from Real Girl Talk Podcast. She writes in, "Great show, always learning something new. Keep sharing." Sherry, thank you for sharing with me this review. I know it takes time to out of your day to not only subscribe to a show, but to rate it and then review it. So thank you. I need the encouragement and the motivation. It helps me out and it helps out people who are looking for this podcast to figure out if it is the right thing for them to listen to in their podcasting journey to keep them motivated and excited to keep on keeping on. So thank you again, Sherry, for taking the time to share your review of the week with me. On today's episode, we have Los Angeles reporter and anchor for KTLA, Courtney Friel. She is the author of Tonight at 10, Kicking Booze and Breaking News, a raw and honest book about her addiction and recovery. This book was recently picked up by the same company that produces Ozark on Netflix. And while she was writing that book, she started a podcast, Keeping It Friel, Conversations on Recovery. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I was just reading one of your passages about what it was like for you to be doing cocaine while you were reporting or like drinking a beer while you were in the editing room and concealing it and you know, how you would use drugs and alcohol to cope with bullies, because there are a lot of bullies when you put yourself out there in so many different ways.
Yeah, I just like to sum up my drinking career as like a 15-year wild, being completely hot mess, wasted all the time with alcohol. And then cocaine was in the mix the whole time. And towards the later years, pills. And I ended up with 7 people surrounding my bed, giving me an intervention. And by that point, enough shenanigans had happened that I kind of knew it was time to wrap it up. And so when they gave me their reasonings to go, I knew that I deserved more for my life, that I had more to offer this world, and that it would be the best thing that I would do for myself. And yet I still thought, I'll just do it for a year. And then I really enjoy, I love being sober, and it's such, yeah, that's why I'm comfortable with being out about it. It wasn't always the case. I kept it under wraps to like the social media world until I had 6 years. And I felt like that was enough time to have some credibility on the matter. And the response to coming out about it was 99.9% positive. And I got so many questions about it. And that's why I wanted to just write a book so that I could like be like, here, read my book. Here's everything I have to say on the matter, all my advice, all my tips, everything you want to know. I can't answer it in a tweet or in an Instagram post. And so now I'm really glad I have the book. The intention was to help people. It wasn't to like make money or even get a movie, which now we'll see if that happens. I mean, they have to write a script first.
Are you going to be involved in the script writing process, or have you just kind of taken a step back?
It's funny because my fiance, he will be my husband as in 2 weeks. We're getting married, but he's a screenwriter. And so I know all about the business from him, but I didn't use any of my connections, and he wants nothing to do with like being a part of it. And Zero Gravity, they do Ozark. They reached out to me and they want to make the movie and do it through their whole production company and stuff. So it's very, very preliminary, but it was fun to be able to announce that it's happening. And I know how the business goes. Like, I hope I only get money if it gets made. So, right. Like, let's hope it does get made.
I'm going to knock on wood because that is a thing. We just want everything to keep on going. And from what I've seen, it looks like it's all moving in a really positive direction.
There's a lot of material there.
How are you feeling about all of this? About how everything is like, when did you find out about this movie possibility? Like, what was your reaction when you heard about it? Could you believe it? Or were you like, when you got that call?
It's cool. I had the call on my 40th birthday. So I was like, yeah, turning 40, things are happening. And then COVID hit. No. But COVID's a great time. I feel like everyone who's listening, I know you speak to the podcast world and everything, like now's the time you should be working on yourself and doing all of these projects because you don't have the distractions of like needing to go to events or parties and things like that. So the company, the Zero Gravity, they were like, yeah, now's the time we're focusing on, you know, writing our projects and doing all that.
Yeah. So I want to back up and talk a little bit about what it's been like for you. I mean, you have a career in the news world. How did you like decide you wanted to be a journalist, and what was the beginning of your journey like?
I watched the news with my dad growing up. And in third grade, it's funny you're talking with me now. I literally just finished a career day with elementary school kids. So I was talking on a very basic level about how I'm fortunate that I knew what I wanted to do. And I shadowed people. Then I worked like on the school newspaper and in the TV studio. I was lucky that my schools had like morning announcements and editing equipment and all of that. And so I was just constantly involved in that world, obsessed with watching the news. And then did the intern route, made my tape, all that stuff. And I wanted to start at the bottom. So I got a job in Jackson, Tennessee. And my very first day, which I was just telling the kids, I'm like, you guys, guess what happened on my first day? There was this huge tornado that left all the town and killed all these people. And it was shocking to see it, but I knew it was like what I wanted to do. And you know, being at the story first, and I'm just very curious by nature and love to know what's going on. So just worked my way up. I worked at Fox News Channel for 6 years, and then I've been at KTLA. I'm in my 8th year at KTLA.
Yes. I remember when
you and my husband, next week.
I cannot believe that it's been 8 years. It blows my mind how fast that all went by.
Yeah.
So much has happened in that time frame. when did you start creating this podcast? I know that KTLA has a few podcasts. Why did you think, okay, I'm going to try this out? What is it about podcasting?
So I had an opportunity at another little small TV studio in town, and I shot like 12 interviews on my own And then I wasn't sure what we were going to do with them. I mean, they were definitely going to air online, but I went to the KTLA news director and was like, hey, I have these 20-minute interviews because mine are only 20 minutes and they're on camera. I was like, if you guys want to air them as like audio or put them on the website and then we can like tease it on my weekend show. And they went for it. And I shot 27 of them and then COVID hit. And I just found out this week, because the studio has been shut down, I just found out that, like, I think tomorrow is their last day. Like, the studio is shutting down. So now I'm kind of, like, I guess I'm at a crossroads. Like, look, what you're doing. Like, could I do it on my own and still give it to KTLA? It's just, you know, it's a lot of freaking extra work. And to be honest, like when COVID hit, I was kind of relieved with it because I was like, I need a break because I was doing it all on my days off. And it was even to just like promote it on all the different avenues and write the stuff up for the website, do the clips and all that. Like, it's a lot of work and I wasn't getting like days off to do it. So, and now like, I mentioned I'm getting married in 2 weeks. So like, that's the focus. And oh, the other thing was like, since my show was like, it was on a set and we would, you know, guests were weird. Like they didn't want to still come and, you know, everything's changed. Like, do people want to do an interview sitting close to you or not? And do I just want to do them on Zooms? And, you know, trying to get guests, it's tough. And managing all that, like I didn't have anyone helping me. And the other challenge, because my podcast was all about sobriety and like my guests were sober people, not everybody wants to talk about their sobriety. So like all the celebrities I was going after, I had like, you know, I probably had like 10 or something. I mean, I was successful for the ones that I got, but any of the big name ones, or I've asked so many people and they've been like, no, I don't want to be the poster child for that. Or yeah. And look, it's everyone's own decision for how they want to talk about it, because it is a sensitive subject, or some people are very private about it. Some people like me are very open about it. So I kind of like went with the 27 people who are really open about it.
Well, something I really like about your interviews, and I think sometimes people miss this if they see you, you know, one of your news reports or even see you anchoring, like you come at the conversations from a really like open-hearted place, and you, like, I know you, so I know that you're just such a sensitive and open-hearted person, and you listen so like deeply to people. And because I've also seen you in the field do this, but not everybody gets to see that. And I think that's an amazing skill that you have. And in your podcast, it's just so transparent. Like, you just get to hear like Courtney really be like Courtney. And like,
you mean when I'm like, oh, I accidentally snorted meth one time. Like, right. That's definitely not something I would say on KTLA.
No, there's just a lot
KTLA
of
KTLA has me very much in like, I feel like I love it there, but I feel very much like it's like the fun police are on me. Like, people are there for their different roles. And I was like always the crazy fun person at all my other jobs, or definitely at Fox News. And then like, now I'm not seen that way and I'm not allowed to do those stories. And it's crazy because I'm like, oh my God, they like take me seriously here. So yeah, the podcast is another way to like get to know me and talk about important issues in a like compassionate, fun way.
Yeah.
Maybe you're like motivating me to keep it going.
Well, something I really love about podcasts is it is a longer form interview. People get to hear like the mess ups and the accidental like moments where you want to edit those out afterwards or when your kids come in. But I also think that's something that makes it really authentic, and people are like, oh my gosh, I feel you. My kids are like every 2 seconds,
right,
like just trying to eat off of me. But I don't know. I really like the medium, and I think that you, like, people get to know you in a different way.
Do you think so that now, like, do you think that it's getting oversaturated? Because I feel like every day I'm getting a press release for a new podcast that started or a new thing on Instagram, like watch my podcast. Like how many people are really, I still to this day, I don't even know how many people have listened to my podcast. I don't know the numbers. I don't care. But it's funny when I get like a random thing like, oh yeah, I've listened to your podcast, like a message about it. Like, oh, cool.
So first and foremost, no, it is not oversaturated. I get that question all of the time because there is a lot of like stuff coming out in the world right now when it comes to podcasts. And there are more people now listening to podcasts than ever before. Still, at least 40% of America doesn't even know what a podcast is.
Oh, wow.
Like, there's a lot of room for growth. That's not... Like a lot of people know what a TV is or what a news station is or what a YouTube channel is or a blog, but a lot of people still don't even know what a podcast is or haven't even listened to one. So there's just so much room to grow in this space, which is really exciting. And I think now bigger companies are now seeing the traction that podcasts have, the power of the podcast. And so now that bigger companies are seeing it, it's starting to be in the news more and be in the news more because bigger companies are now investing in it. So no, it's not oversaturated. It's just kind of newsworthy right now because it's one of those industries. It's one of the industries that's in an upward trend compared to a lot of industries, which unfortunately aren't. And like, for example, the studio that is closing, that really sucks. That's really, it's because the audio quality and the video quality of your podcast are great. So
yeah. Well, I'll figure it out. I mean, maybe I could shoot them at KTLA. I have no idea. But like I said, I was kind of just on pause from it.
Well, I'm sure more people are going to want to hear interviews from you as more people get to know about your book and more people get to, I mean, especially once this movie comes out, when it happens.
I know. I should start like writing a second book. So when that comes out. Well, and that's the thing too. Like you think, oh, everyone has a book, but like, do you have any idea, like the crazy, like experience that I had writing that book? I mean, I could talk for an hour just on that and like all the things that went wrong and just how much work it is. Like, no, actually most people don't have a book and most people, I think there's a statistic that like 80% of the world thinks they have a book in them, but like the amount of people that actually write it is like -2 or something because it's so hard. Like you have to nowadays, like to get a book deal is hard. Then you're going to self-publish and everyone takes advantage of you and you get conned or, I mean, I had 1,000 wrong, but look, I have this poster here right now. So that's cool. And I'm able to help people. And I have people reaching out to me like, well, you know, your book's helping me. I'm giving it to my brother because he's suffering with addiction or it's helping me. Like, that's why I did it. It certainly was not for the money, girl.
So what has that been like for you? Did the podcast come before the book? Like when in your mind did you think, I want to do these things? I want to take these sides because they're almost like side steps in your career. Like you're a TV news reporter and anchor, but now you're doing these other things.
Right. Right. The book was a 2-year process. So the podcast started like a third of the way into the process, but I was never able to promote my book on the show because I had taped them all right. Like, I think I ended them at the end of last year. And then when I was like, okay, I'll shoot more after. I had so many in the can that like we only released one every week. And then I was like, all right, I've got to do my, you know, my book stuff. So that was January of this year. I went on like my book tour and thank God it came out before COVID. So I was able to have like parties and do news appearances and stuff. And then kind of like the second wave of promotion, that's when COVID did interrupt it. And so like I was going to have book signings in Sacramento and I had other like studio appearances. I had all these things planned and other events and everything, but COVID, you know, got in the way of that. But so I'm just glad it came out when it did. Cause there was talk about delaying it. We were going to try to do it like in the spring. And I just really wanted to come out in January because that's dry January and it's like new year, new you. So It happens.
It happened. It's out there. So your book, was this something that was on your heart, like weighing in you, and you just wanted to get it out of your body and just put it out there in the world? Like I'd love to talk about that development process.
I touched on it a little bit ago, how when I came out about being sober at 6 years, I just was peppered with so many questions all the time. And I was like, I should put this all down in a book. And initially I wanted to call it like How to Do Shit Sober. And there are so many recovery books out there where the people just say like, here's all the crazy shit I did, and then I got sober at the end. And I was like, no, I don't want it to be like a whole drunkalogue. You know, I don't want it to be just like, here's all the crazy stuff that I did. Because people will maybe want to relate with you, but then like, there's no hope, I feel like, after that. And you don't even know if the person is still sober or whatever. Like, well, what then? What did you do? So I put the intention out there that by the time I had 10 years sober, I wanted to have a book out. And that's exactly what happened, which was cool.
Yeah. But when you say these things, I really do think that there's power when you say it and then you put it out there into the world.
Yep. That's what we were telling those little kids at the career school.
You say it and it will become real. So can you tell me a little bit about some of the challenges? You were mentioning that there are people who try to take advantage of you when you write a book. Like, okay, what happened?
Well, it's just that like, you can either go the route where I know people who have been like, okay, I'm taking off work. I don't have a relationship. I don't have kids. I'm just going to go live in a coffee shop from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night and bang out this book. And I'm going to teach myself how to make an Audible booth so I can track it. And then I'm going to edit it. And then I'm going to like figure out how to do a cover. Like, they literally figured out every single thing. Like, I mean, you can publish through Amazon, but someone has to format that and everything. So they did that all themselves. And I had read so many articles on it, and I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. And then I was hooked up with this woman who was super helpful to me, but she was old school. And she, you know, was like, you have to do the proposal. And the proposal took me a full year. And that's what you need if you're trying to get an agent. And if the agent needs to have that proposal to try to sell it to the big, you know, agencies or whatever. So that in itself, like, you have to have 2 completed chapters. You have to have your what your demographics are, what your media marketing plan is. You have to have 8 to 10 comparative book titles and why your book is similar and different. You have to have all the chapters laid out and a page on each chapter, like, and all the it was like, you know, so many pages long, and you have to wow them with your writing. So I was getting like collaborative writing, like help in the 2 chapters. But the point is, so I spent like 10 grand to do this proposal, right? I mean, with the cover and then, to have the graphics, like to make it all nice and the mind mapping session and all that. And then, I mean, ultimately I ended up just freaking writing the book and pretty much self-publishing it. So it's like, I could have skipped that whole thing and just written the book. But if you're trying to go because here's the thing that I learned after the fact, only 2 out of 10,000 book proposals get picked up by the top 5, like really big marketing agencies. Like, and HarperCollins was like, oh, we really love it, but you're not famous enough. We're only going to do that for like Elizabeth Vargas, because she has a national show. And then one of the other ones, Simon & Schuster, was like, well, we want you to write a different book for us. And at that point, I had already written my book. And I was like, I'm not starting over. I was like, maybe I can write the second book for you or whatever. But yeah. And then there's things like that I literally have like, had like lawyer stuff about, which sucked. So it cost me 50 grand to do my book when it was all said and done. And I probably made $6,000. You can have all the media and no one really, I mean, like, who really buys books? Like, the average person and I even had like, I mean, I even had an audience, but there's people who told me they would, you know, that I know that are like, oh, I'll buy your book, but they still haven't, and they haven't read it or whatever. So like, people say they're going to or whatever. So look, I'm just grateful that my intention was not to make money or not to be like famous from it or even be a best you know, a New York Times bestseller. I did make headway on like, I was like, you know, the first few weeks I was like really up. I was in the top 10 in like four different categories on Amazon, which is great. But look, I'm not in bookstores and that's okay. It's fine. Cause I only buy every single thing in my life on Amazon. So that's where my book is. And you know what? Jeff Bezos is getting half of my book from every time someone buys it. He gets half.
Isn't that something else?
You know that like the average author only sells 200 copies of their book and it's to their friends and family. And most people don't make any money at all. Like the book world, I could write a book on writing a book, but I'm not going to write that book for no money.
Gosh. So that's so crazy.
Yes, it definitely is crazy. I had no idea. And guess what? Because I had no idea, I had many people take advantage of me. And I mean, like, we'll have that as a private conversation in the time if you want those details, but it's okay. I got through it. I've meditated and journaled a ton on it. And it is what it is. Everything happened as it was. And look, if it ends up being like a movie that's awesome, then that's amazing.
I just keep knocking. Yes, it is amazing. And when did you find out that that was even a possibility, that people were thinking about that?
Oh, when they called me on my birthday.
Just they called you and then...
3 months after the book was out, they heard about it. They hadn't even read it. And they were like, that's when we got the conversation going.
And so what was your reaction when you heard this?
Well, so the funny thing is that like, cause everyone always has said, I look like Margot Robbie and like when the Bombshell movie came out, they're like, is she playing you? Blah, blah, blah. So I actually know Margot Robbie's manager. And I, before this even happened, I reached out to him and was like, hey, I have something that like, and she is a production company. So I was like, I have something that could either go like a romantic, fun comedy movie, or could be like something really, really serious where there's like tons of crying and Eat, Pray, Love It or whatever. Like, is this something she'd want to be involved in? And so the manager sent it on to her people who like read for that stuff or whatever. And they were like, well, she's doing something similar. So it doesn't make sense for her to, you know, take this on, but thanks, you know, for offering it to us. You got to try, right?
Mm-hmm.
People are like, who would you want to play you? I'm like, well, she'd obviously be my first choice, but I already did, you know, who knows now with Zero Gravity if like that will help or if COVID has changed things. She's supposed to play Barbie.
Oh, that's the other.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what that script entails. I mean, and then she already did Bombshell. Maybe she's like, I don't want to do any more Fox News people-ish type things. News Barbie people.
Maybe. Yeah. And she has
I'm such like a meditator about it. Like I wasn't surprised at all because I really have been like, every day I'm on my knees and I'm like, I surrender what happens with the book. I hope that it helps people. I hope that the right writer comes on board because they've already had one writer like fall off from it. So, you know, that's how that world goes. It's like, I can't do anything about it. So I just have to surrender that like God has a better plan to get the message out there.
I mean, I think that's a really great, healthy place to come at it.
Well, yeah. What else can I do? I mean, unless I'm going to like learn how to write a screenplay myself. I mean, my own fiance, like, you know, he's like, no, I don't want to do that. Like it's too personal or whatever. Like I don't have time. I don't have time to do anything. I want to learn Spanish. I want to learn how to do a yoga handstand. And I literally have no freaking time to practice those things.
I feel you. I do not have time for anything anymore.
Right?
Gosh. And I don't even know how to turn my brain off. It just goes.
Meditating. That's chapter 7 in my book.
So I do meditate, but I need to be better at meditating. I meditate nightly with the tape.
Then don't you fall asleep?
Different. Yep. And then I fall asleep. So it's not as good as real work.
It's still better than nothing because a few nights a week. So my fiance sits in the chair and then Cash and Cameron, I'm in the middle of them on the bed, and I set the timer for 22 minutes and they end up falling asleep. So they meditate with us. And then when the timer goes off, that's when Jim and I like leave and watch TV or whatever. So but like sometimes, you know, sometimes you do fall asleep and I end up sleeping in the bed with them the whole night because I'm tired. It's better than nothing.
It is. It is better than nothing. Something we've kind of touched on it. I feel like it can be hard, especially like if you have a very professional career, like being a TV news reporter, right? Like were you ever worried that sharing yourself in this book or in your podcast would actually hurt your career?
Remember when I said 99.9% of people supported me, like the 0.1% that didn't or whatever, that was their concern. I'm just a really big believer in like, you write your own story. You like, if I'm going to sit here and worry about that, then that probably would happen to me. But I'm kind of like, no, I own it. Like my whole message is I'm making sobriety look cool. Like I put it, I'm not going around preaching. It's not like I'm like a Bible thumper about sobriety or I'm not like judging other people. Like my whole thing is about showing like, oh, here's like a sparkling water drink that looks cool that I can drink. And like, you know, like just everything about like having fun. Like, oh, I went dancing tonight. I wasn't drinking and I had fun, like showing those type of things.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. And I love that about you. And I love that about your social media because you're constantly like putting it out there.
Well, it's
keeping it real.
Like, here's the thing, though. Like, it's also a touchy subject. Like, if someone's really going to have a problem with me for this, like, it's not like I'm saying, hey, I'm doing cocaine today or yesterday. It's like, this was so long ago and I've changed my life. Like, it's a positive thing. But like, it's kind of like, a sensitive subject. Like you don't want to be like not supportive of it, right? Because then that can look bad too.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure there's haters that are like, ooh, I hope she relapses. But I'm like, no, that's, I take it very seriously. I mean, I guess, I don't know, but I don't think about that.
Yeah.
And look, like really, if someone's haters. Like, if someone's not going to hire, like, I'm the best version of myself because I'm sober. And I write about this in the book, like how to tell your employer about it. Like, don't tell them, I feel like, don't come out about it unless you're serious that you want to live that way. Because by being out, it keeps me accountable. And I think it makes them look good. Like they, KTLA gave a contribution to my sober charity thing that I did. And that by them letting me like air and like my podcast and talk about it on the news, like all those clips of people were like, I during the 10 o'clock news, I'd be like, oh, and did you know that so-and-so, you know, and then they have their soundbite, like I was doing all this coke and I was a mess, blah, blah, blah. Like it's a serious issue that needs to be addressed.
And you're addressing it in a really fun way and also a serious way.
Yeah.
Speaking of your book, I wanted to bring up the Trump stuff.
Oh, right.
Just, you know.
Well, and that was another debacle that ended up happening with the book coming out. It's like the gift that keeps on giving.
What do you mean? Tell me.
Well, I mean.
Can you tell me? I don't know if you can.
I mean, it just, there were people who were not happy that was coming out. That part was like making the news. So
maybe
you can Google it. Tell your people, they can Google it if they really want to know more details about it, but it's all good now. It's all good in the hood.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I get passionate about this, but like, this is your life and what makes your life any less like worthy of sharing? Like, this is a big thing that happened to you. He was part of it. And why not talk about it in your book or in.
Right. Well,
forever.
That's like, art memoir too. So like, I can talk about whatever I want to. And I don't care. I mean, if people don't believe me, whatever, like ask the guy who's in the room with me that like you know, came out saying, okay, that I witnessed that whole thing. Like, and it was, yes. I mean, it's not even like it was a big deal. It was a very mild story. And yes. I was just kind of talking about like, oh, here are some of the things I was also dealing with while trying to get newly sober, like what's mm-hmm. going on at Fox News. And then like, I have to deal with this and that and whatnot.
So what she's referring to, and I don't want to give too much away because you can also read about it in the book. You got a phone call from Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. Well, the story is that I used to interview him on the red carpet and I love pageants. So that's when he owned Miss Universe. And I was like, Donald, it's on my bucket list to be a judge at Miss USA. He's like, well, give me a card. I'll look into that for you. So I gave him my card. And I don't know, like a month went by or something. And so I'm in the office with my co-office mate, Rick Fulbaum, and my office line rings. It's like, Courtney, it's Donald Trump. I was like, oh, hi. He's like, yeah, I looked into that for you. And because you're Fox and we're NBC, it's not going to work. But what are your career goals? And you're the most, you know, you're the best looking one at Fox. And I watch you all the time. You do a great job, blah, 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 blah. And then out of nowhere, like we're just like shooting the shit or whatever. And out of nowhere, he's like, you should come up to my office sometime so we can kiss. And I was just like, who says that? Like, ooh, gross. Like I was repulsed. And I was just like, Donald, I believe we're both married. I actually thought at the time too, I was like, didn't this guy run for president? Like, that's really ballsy that he's like calling me on my office line, like, aren't they recording this? Or we should be recording this or whatever. It doesn't make a difference anyways, because people are either going to believe it or not. I don't really care whether they believe it or not. I mean, it happened, so.
It happened, and it's probably, it probably happens a lot to a lot of different.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've heard, that's how, I mean, look, that whole generation mm-hmm. of things have changed so much. Oh, that reminds me. I just finished taking my my sexual harassment thing for work. I was just doing that yesterday. It's like the things I have seen in my life, like versus like what is allowed now, is just like has changed. And like I even have to be careful because, you know, I have a potty mouth.
Courtney, so I went from the TV news world where it's like you're like searching for a bathroom in the middle of a crime scene or something at like 3 a.m. And it's just like, what do I do? Where do I go?
The worst.
It's just like crazy. And to working in, and then there's like this weird sense of humor you develop because you deal with tragedy all the time and only some people get it. And then right. I found myself working in the corporate world and I didn't know where the lines were anymore. Like we're talking, like I just felt like, and also I'm very touchy. I think you become touchy when you're interviewing people, especially in sensitive situations, but that's not allowed in the corporate world. At least where I was working, I had to be very careful not to touch anyone to ever give them the wrong idea.
Interesting.
Which really took me by surprise. Yeah.
Well, plus like the newsroom, like everyone's just like cursing and
yeah, it's just and like,
no, my friends are like, Courtney, you have like a chip missing. And I was like, what do you mean? They're like, you're like, oh, I'm so glad I got to cover a murder today. Cause I've been doing COVID for like 3 months. It's like,
but that's a real thing. That's
yes. That's I just wanted to change of pace back to the old hit and run story. I mean, yes, it's awful, but so I don't know. I'm very out there. I mean, hello, that's my whole thing. Like I have no filter. Mm-hmm. I can keep it secret, but I'm very just like, what you see is what you get. And I will tell you how my body is reacting to everything.
Yeah. You've been jaded.
Yes. That's a great word for it. We're so desensitized from it.
Yes. Desensitized, jaded. What would you say to people who are not desensitized to putting themselves out there when it comes to stepping in front of a microphone, stepping in front of a camera? They might get a little bit in their head and feel like even though they have a story to tell that they can't do it because of their fear.
I would first tell them to read The Fifth Agreement by Don Ruiz Miguel or Don Miguel Ruiz. That's it. And it tells you how to not take things personally. And it will explain why people react to you based on what's going on in their life and what they want the people in their lives, the roles in their stories to do. And so if you can like not take any criticism personally or not care what anyone has to think about you and just know that your intention, I think it also has a lot to do with intention. So if your heart is in the right place and you want to get the message out because you want to help people, then just go ahead and do it. And who cares? I mean, look, not everyone wants to go out and like try to help people. I'm always like, excuse me, like I'm doing all this shit for free and like on my own time. Like I don't have to be doing that crap. I don't. I'm not getting anything out of it. It's just like, I'm giving back. So, like a bunch of people in this world don't want to give back. So be the one that does and then be like, screw you. Like, what are you doing for society? Mm-hmm.
That's great. That's great advice. I think that when we start thinking like, this is not about me, it's about me doing something for other people.
Right.
It's so much easier to put yourself out there because you're taking yourself out of the equation.
Yeah. Also, like, I mean, it's my story. Like, why am I going to hide the most important thing or like the biggest thing in my life? Like, I'm going to keep that a secret when I'm so open about everything else? No, I mean, I can help people. Like, people have gotten sober because of me. And like, I helped lots of people out there that are struggling. So, and this having the book or having the podcast is just a way to do it on a bigger platform.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, I feel like a lot of, first off, awesome that you're making a difference in people's lives. Like getting that feedback has to feel so empowering. Like,
well, that's,
I don't know, or just good.
That's the reward. It really
is. Yeah, that's.
And I just look at it like, whatever, the $50,000 to have to do my book, like, that's just a gift to society. It's just like donating or whatever. Like, I mean, I did a lot of meditation and a lot of journaling about it. And I was like, okay, like, I don't spend time worrying about it anymore.
Well, I also think that those are really good, like, takeaways for people who are worried or scared or like feel like they have haters or bullies. Meditating, journaling, and then talking about it with people can actually help.
Like therapy.
Yes. It's like personal therapy. It's very important.
So, I mean, the journaling thing's been helpful. Like I was bummed. You probably know, like KTLA started the show and it's like, would be perfect for me and I'm not doing it. And like, there's a bunch of us who are like, wow, we would love to be doing that. And like, it can bother you. But so I just like journal about it, you know, just like write out all my thoughts. And then I'm already over it. It's like, okay. Yeah.
My journal looks really mean sometimes.
Well, what I do is I always throw mine away. Like I set the timer for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's not really journaling. It's like kind of free writing. I set the timer for 20 minutes. I let myself write about everything. And I've written a lot about COVID too. That I've been very upset about this situation. I'm supposed to be getting married in Italy, by the way, but now it's not happening. You have to come to my virtual wedding, Christine.
I'd love to.
There's something about it that's very therapeutic and it's calming. Like I'm kind of in a trance when I'm done and then I throw it away or I rip it into pieces or I burn it.
Mm. You know, I think I read in some book about how Abraham Lincoln would, whenever he was mad at someone, he would write them a letter about why he was so mad at them. And he would just be like, share all of the anger, all of like the worst things that he was feeling. And then he would like burn it, rip it up, just, and that would help him.
I think that's advice for like when you break up with someone too, but you're not supposed to send it.
Yeah.
There's something very, very therapeutic. And since I can't just go drink and numb my feelings, I have to find healthy ways to cope with my issues. And that's one that works.
Yeah. Yeah. I should throw my journals away. I haven't.
Well, no, there's also something to be said. Like, I'm glad that I kept my rehab notes. I didn't look at them for 7 years. And then when I mean, look, writing this book, there was a ton of very painful things. Like most of the book wasn't fun to write. And it was really putting myself out there and expressing like vulnerable, really vulnerable things. But like, that's how people can relate to you, because your pain can help other people. So if you were to ever write a book, which I might strongly suggest not doing, unless you want to have like a crazy time. The rest of that.
Just writing a book, it sounds like there's a lot, like, be prepared.
Oh, yes. Those things, the point is that your journals could be useful in the writing of the book. You go back and you're like, oh yes, at this time I was feeling this, and then my life changed, and that didn't end up happening, and that was a stupid worry, or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well,
and now
I do have a book, like summary and like chapters written.
Right.
I did it like
years ago, but I just walked away. It's better to do a book that is specialized. Like my book is specialized. You actually sell, I guess, more books that way and can reach more people if it's targeted. Like I just read an article recently on, it was like, there's like, you know, 20,000 books on meditation, but if you're going to like do it specifically for like meditation for nurses, like then that's going to have like the better chance of selling than if you're just like, here's a book on meditation.
Well, it's actually the same with podcasting. The more like niche you are, like right. You go niche and then like niche again and then niche one more time, then that podcast is most likely going to grow faster, have higher ratings, have a more engaged audience, be easier, more easily monetized. It's all about like niching down, which feels so uncomfortable, right? Because at first you're like, I want to talk to everyone. So
there's a lot of people in this world.
Yeah,
for sure.
Don't need to talk to them all. Well, Courtney, thank you so much.
I mean, it's hard to get them all to find you.
Yeah.
This was fun.
This was fun. I almost forgot. We do have a couple questions.
Ooh, okay.
That I wanted to share. One of them, here, let me pull it up. I'm just pulling my DMs up. okay.
I'm like, how many times have I gotten myself in trouble already on this podcast?
Do you really feel that way?
I don't know. But well, again, podcasts, let me keep it real. That's for sure. And this may have been my most keeping it real podcast I've ever done.
Well, thanks for keeping it real here. That's also the name of her podcast, Keeping It Real, Conversations on Recovery. Okay, here, my gosh, I have two.
The good thing about my podcast too is that like, even if it ends up just being like one season, it's mm-hmm. evergreen. So those can live on forever. I mean, I'd love to do more, but if for some reason like that isn't possible because the studio shut down or whatnot, like I have 27 20-minute interviews with different people on their sober journeys.
Yeah. And actually, that's how some books are made. Like some podcasts have turned into books because it's like all these chapters of books as an episode. So
Right. Which I could go back and use some of those if I decide to ever do this again, which I mean, I'm kind of a masochist, I guess. So I really don't have the time right now. Maybe okay.
One day, once you've got the headstand down, then, and the Spanish learned.
Sí. Yo soy presentadora de noticias.
The presenter of the news. Okay, so this, what was that?
I am learning Spanish. Estoy aprendiendo español.
Qué bueno. Where are you learning?
On the internet. Babbel flashcards.
Just with your kids?
No, that was my initial goal. And it's probably going to be like the more realistic way to learn Spanish, just waiting till they're in Spanish class. And then I'm going to like learn with them. I think I might take a class. Like I want to do like one of those like West LA college classes. It was like 5 classes for $99 and I was going to sign up, but like I was going to be out of town for like my wedding and honeymoon and stuff. So
yeah,
next time around, I think that I'm just like, I need to be in the class to learn it that way. That's how I'd learn best.
Same. And it's also just nice to be with people. I miss that. Just miss people. Aww.
Well, I'm still with people all the time. I have been this whole time at work, so I'm blessed in that sense.
That is really nice. All right, I've got a question for you.
You're in the thick of it with the kids being so young. Your life does come back, I promise, when they get older.
Thank you, Courtney. I think I needed to hear that, actually.
Yeah, the first 3 years of the work.
It's really lovely to be in the moment with them. And I'm trying to have these memories stay in my mind. Right.
Just still, remember that everything is a phase. Just remember that. It just, if the kid's being a jerk, you're like, you're only going to be like this now. Like tomorrow it'll be something different.
Courtney, Asher's new thing to say is, I don't like you.
Aww.
Like he wakes up in the morning, he's crying. I go to get him out of his bed. I just want to hug him because he's crying. And he says, I don't like you. And I'm like,
again, just be like, that's just a phase. You'll like me tomorrow.
Right in my heart, buddy. Jeez. Just, can I hug you? Can I give you kisses? Okay. Let me read this question before I forget, because my mom brain is real. Okay, this one comes from Lexi, and she runs a company called the PR Bar Inc. And she's curious about pitching. She asks, how do you want to be pitched, like for stories?
The shorter, the better. Like, just be like, who, what, where, when, why, boom. Be like, I mean, we all have like ADD attention spans in news. So if you like send me some big ass paragraph, like I'm not even going to get to the bottom of it. So be like, here's the interviews. This is the video we would use. Like maybe even throw in some suggested questions or whatnot, like tie it to like something that's happening in the news. Then that's the better chance. And don't take it personally. Honestly, I would say don't take it personally if you don't get a response back, because that just means like, I couldn't do anything with it. Like if I like the story, you know, not everybody, like I don't do interviews on my show, on our weekend shows. So I can't hook up. I can't get a guest segment, and I'm covering death and destruction every day. So they don't like me to pitch those types of stories at my job, but there's other reporters. Look for the reporter who does those types of stories. Like, when I was doing my podcast, if someone would pitch me a sober guest, then I'd be like, yeah, because I do something like that. But do you know anything else I do? Have you ever seen me do a guest segment on KTLA? No. Like, so study up what the people do there to see if it actually works for them. Because like, I might not have the chance to do those types of stories. So don't take it personally that I can't do anything with it.
Yeah. Agreed. Gosh, it's really hard not to take things personal though, right?
Read emotions. The fifth agreement.
Yeah. I want to bring in, we have Heather Childs with us right now.
God, she's been in here the whole time.
She has. She's still here. And she wrote some questions for you. So if you want to answer some of your, or answer, ask a question, Heather, go for it.
Sure, I would love to. So already I have enjoyed this entire interview so much. and I wanted to ask you, so if you could speak to yourself at 26, when you became the youngest on air, host, like, with Fox and Friends, what would you say to yourself?
I would have told her to read that freaking book, The Fifth Agreement. That is like, that has changed my life so much. I mean, it tells you like, you can only do your best with like the energy that you've got. Like, just always try to do your best. Don't make assumptions. That helps me with not worrying. And then with the don't take things personally. Oh, be skeptical and learn to listen. They're all the like agreements for like mind mastery. I'm telling you, it's a game changer. I would have said that. And look, I would have told her exactly what I would have told someone at 26 that was younger than me. And that hasn't changed. Like, I believe in being nice to everyone and working hard. I mean, you see the people on the way up. I'm going to see those people again on the way down too. Like, some people look at like being nice as their kindness as a weakness. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't believe that, because I think that like, if you are like positive and energetic and nice to someone, like that's more memorable. And like, they're certainly not going to rehire you if you're an ass.
So what really got you to that point when you started to say, okay, I don't care what people are going to think. I just want to put my story out there, be authentic. And a lot about what you said about, you know, wanting to, that reward of being open to help other people and not worrying about what people think.
Yeah, I think I just realized, like, I'm so open with everything else about my life. I'm not going to keep this part of me a secret. I mean, 6 years to keep a secret from like viewers or whatever was already pretty much a long time. But the people in my life knew I was always very open about talking about it in my life, pretty much from day one. So it just was knowing the intention behind it.
Okay. And so how do you separate work life and having a professional image, as long as like being a mom and having a personal life while in the public eye? How do you kind of separate that? I know you talked a little bit about like meditation and journaling. What is the main way that you can separate that?
Well, I think that my whole life before having kids was all about my career. So now when I see like a younger woman in the, well, and when I mean younger, I'm like, you know, early 30s, since I'm 40 now, I kind of like to say, like, please don't become one of those people in the news that like is like 60 and trying to hold on to the news career and they have no kids and they're divorced and like they're just still hanging on to the business, because the business will kick you out. The business doesn't give a shit about you, you know, like what's left. And look, before I got sober, like I hated children. I did not want to have them. And it really wasn't even like a planned thing. It was kind of like, whoops, and then whoops again. And those have been like the blessings for me. And by having them, it's like, I have a life outside of work now. I did not have that before. I was 100%, my whole life was work and partying. But then when I gave up that, it was back to work and like wanting these career goals. And now it's like, I used to pray for balance between work life and like living life. And now it's like a job. Like I love what I do, but like, it's still a job. And it's like, oh, I can look forward to like the vacation that I'm going to take or whatever, because my whole life isn't just work. So I don't know if that answered the question.
That definitely did. Yes.
And Christine, I'm sure you feel that way too. Cause like once you have a kid, you're like, you know, it really doesn't, I mean, it doesn't really matter that much. Cause like, I'm a badass to my children.
Yeah, they think I'm super awesome and really cool, except for Asher this morning. But but most of the time, I'm like the sun and the moon to them, right? Like it's really awesome in a weird feeling kind of a way. But
it just makes you more well-rounded. And I think you connect more with viewers because there's lots of moms out there.
I feel like I got to a place where I appreciated women at a whole new level.
Yeah, especially working.
Yeah. Being a mom is really hard.
That gets easier though. It's like you're like the first part of it is so much more physical. It's just like physically challenging. And like work is more mentally challenging.
That's a good point. I miss more of the mental challenge, I think.
You're doing this. I mean, this is great.
Well, yes, there is a lot. I'm mentally challenged different right now than I was with Asher. That makes sense. But we can talk about it more. Post-interview.
That's on the parenting podcast.
That's on the parenting podcast. All right. Thank you so much, Courtney. And thank you, Heather, for those questions. And everyone who's listening, you definitely should, one, check out Courtney's podcast, and two, her book. Tonight at 10, hold on, let me make sure I say it right.
Okay. Breaking Booze and Breaking News.
Tonight at...
Which is only available on Amazon and Audible.
Tonight at 10, Kicking Booze and Breaking News. And I'll have a link to that, the Amazon link actually, in the show notes. So if you guys want to just like click on it and you can go right there.
So you will be entertained. You don't even have to know anything about sobriety or want to get sober. I will inspire you and tell you crazy ass stories.
Yes. All right. Thank you again, Courtney.
Thank you guys. Have a great day.
Thank you guys for listening. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find this podcast on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and more. If you would like to email me directly, feel free to reach out at podcastcoachchristine@gmail.com. And of course, you can head to my website, christine-o'donnell.com, for frequently asked questions, the latest on what's going on in the industry, and I look forward to seeing you over there.